Welcome to the Freedom Report.
What I love about Austin Peterson is his love of the battle. He wants to fight.
Austin was, of course, the rabble-rouser, just to make sure I stayed Rothbardian.
We live in a world fraught with danger, and there is a certain amount of danger that the public must endure in order to secure the blessings of liberty.
For economic freedom and personal liberty. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Austin Peterson here, producer of the Freedom Report podcast. Thank you so much for joining me. Today is Monday, October the 15th. On Sunday, October the 14th, I drove to St. Louis, Missouri to attend the inaugural meeting of the Republican Liberty Caucus of Missouri. These are some of the interviews and discussions that we had.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report podcast. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. I'm very excited today because I'm talking to two of the biggest movers and shakers in Missouri when it comes to the Liberty Movement. Two people that I was honored to make friends with during my U.S. Senate campaign, and I'm delighted to have them both here. One is Mike Franco, who is now the chairman of the Republican Liberty Caucus of the entire state of Missouri. Mike, thank you so much for coming to my show.
Thank you, Austin.
Really appreciate you, and thanks for organizing this meeting here today in St. Louis. And thank you to Neil Sruherick for having us, of course. And when I was campaigning over the last year, I had three candidates that sort of became like the candidates that I most identified with, or at least the ones that I shared the strongest connection with. One of them was Sondra McDowell, who's running for our state auditor. The other one was Ben Baker, who's running down in Neosho for state rep. Had a really good relationship that I built with him during the campaign. And then the other one was Tony Lavasco, who I'm here with right now. Tony, thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you, Austin. I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, so Tony has got a funny story because Tony was running for city council, right? And then what happened? You didn't win the primary, right? We both lost our primaries. We're like, boo-hoo, Austin and Tony, we lost. And then what happened?
Yeah, so it was rather ridiculous timing. So the county council primary was on the 7th, of course, as you know, the same day as yours.
Uh-huh.
And you know, we were kind of licking our wounds from that and kind of, all right, what's going to happen next? Well, my wife and I, our anniversary was just a couple days later. Our anniversary is on the 9th, and so we went out of town 3-4 days for our annual trip that we do to celebrate our anniversary. We did that. We came back, had a weekend to clean the house, kind of put the campaign stuff away a little bit, and then right after that, boom, Robert Cornejo from District 64, state representative, decided to resign to join the Labor Commission. And I was pretty much immediately approached by a handful of people within the party and asked, you know, hey, do you maybe want to run for this? And I kind of had this deer in the headlights. Oh, well, this is interesting. And you know, immediately, like, well, yeah, I got to do it. You know, this is an amazing opportunity that you can't plan, you can't manufacture to have a platform to help move the needle and fight for liberty. So I told him yes, so here I am.
Mike, we're kind of blessed here in Missouri, and especially you starting this chapter such as it is. It's not like you're trying to start a statewide chapter of the Republican Liberty Caucus in New York or California. Or, you know, it's in Missouri, it's like there's fertile ground here. You know, once you announced that you were going to form this group, what kind of response did you get?
Well, first, I had put it out on, I guess the National RLC had started a Facebook group, who knows when, some long time ago. I had found that. And at one point, I asked, who actually runs this? Mm-hmm. And it turned out nobody did. Mm-hmm. And I volunteered to have something to do with it. Later that spring, after my own schedule freed up, and Alex Snicker, our executive director, contacted me about it. And when he and you had an event out in St. Charles earlier in the year, we talked about it a little more, and we discussed the particulars of what it takes to form a state affiliate. I know here in Missouri, speaking of being blessed, historically we've always been considered like the swing state of all swing states, because mm-hmm. historically, St. Louis operated a little more like an eastern city. Kansas City operated a little more like a western city. We had the north, which was a little more like sort of like Iowa, Nebraska, mm-hmm. southern Missouri, a little more like, say, Oklahoma,
Arkansas.
Like, so you had these various kind of demographics around the country that you could find represented within the state. Mm-hmm. And I think the message of liberty has an appeal to each one of them, mm-hmm. albeit in some cases for different ways.
The Kavanaugh confirmation hearings, to me, sort of radicalized me a bit. It kind of drove me, I won't say into partisanship, but sort of like it drove me into a scenario where I found myself wanting to make allies and build a coalition with people that I normally kind of internally fight with, because I saw that the threat from the left was so great. And Tony, you know, we were talking about, you know, not getting ourselves into this left, we've talked about, you know, just left-right narratives. But with how disgusting those hearings were and the behavior of the Democrats, would you say that, I mean, Lindsey Graham became a hero. How the hell did that happen? I'm sharing Lindsey Graham
yeah.
memes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there does seem to be a bit of a consolidation on the right. Do you think that next month's election is going to be a red wave because of the behavior of the Democrats? What are your thoughts here on the national scene?
Well, I'm not good at predicting how discourse will affect the elections, because that's a whole different science. But you know, as far as personally, like how it affects my views of things, and I think you're totally right that the vitriol coming from the left over Kavanaugh and the accusations and just the complete lack of civility in that whole discussion, I think has really turned a lot of people off to politics in general. Mm-hmm. We've heard from a lot of people that not just I'm never voting Republican because you guys supported that rapist guy, or I'm never voting Democrat because you guys, you know, those guys were just throwing out those 30-year-old charges. Like, I've heard some of that, but a lot of what I've heard is, can't everybody just grow up? Mm-hmm. You know, can't we talk about whether or not someone has the qualifications, has the right positions on the issues? Can we get back to that? Mm-hmm. You know, it seems
no,
like
I am Spartacus.
No, right. I mean, you know,
yeah, who is Spartacus?
I realize it's not a new thing. We had Robert Bork, we had Clarence Thomas. I mean, this isn't exactly a revelation, but it seemed like at the very least I was holding out hope after all that nonsense was over, after we had the votes, after it was time, okay, you know, he's going to get in.
Yeah.
Couldn't have spent a day kind of talking about what he thinks on the issues, you know.
Exactly.
I think that would have been an olive branch that would have made a big difference to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And the Democrats, of course, immediately forgot about that.
Well, they had a golden opportunity to drive a wedge between the Republican base, like to take all of this sort of disparate ideologies of the Republican Party and pick apart Kavanaugh's policy positions such that he could have potentially been opposed.
Right.
I mean, you take Rand Paul, for example. Rand Paul was initially skeptical of that nomination because of the Fourth Amendment issues, and we've heard a lot from libertarians who have rightful, skeptical issues with Kavanaugh over that issue alone. But the Fourth Amendment was not really what was at stake in that hearing, even though it was to us. What was at stake in that hearing was due process. What was at stake?
Absolutely.
Even though that is tangentially related.
That. That might be related.
Well, right, it is. But you know, I'm going to use this term, and you guys don't have to use it. But I mean, in my opinion, Marxist feminism, there's the different schools of feminism, the march. Marxist feminists are on the march, right? And they hide behind.
And by the
victims.
March, I think you really mean the war path.
Yeah, the war path, right? And it feels as if the underlying agenda that's coming out of this Me Too movement, which I believe started in earnest with real victims who do need to be heard and need to be respected, but that the people who behind the Democratic Party have this agenda that they're trying to push to destroy.
Look at anything and say,
families.
What can I do with this?
Yeah,
right.
How do I co-opt X, Y, or Z to accomplish whatever I'd like to do anyway?
Yeah. I hear from moms that call themselves mama bears, and they say, you know, we're worried about our sons.
Yeah.
We don't want them hanging around with anybody because we're afraid of false accusations. Yeah. We're sort of drowning in outrage culture. I actually was having a discussion with a friend of mine on this podcast the other day. We're talking about dating in the era of Trump. But, you know, we were talking about the question of rape in the United States and whether if you included the men in prison who are being raped in overall statistics, then, you know, more men are being raped than women. I said that.
I don't know, but here's the thing, what are the statistics?
But my mistake was that in some sense I was giving in to the dialectic. I was competing in the victim Olympics, right? It's like who's got it off worse, right? But can we all agree, Tony, that sometimes like all of our lives are shit in some ways and find an understanding? But how far do you think that PC culture can go? Because it feels like we're dialed up to 11. Like it's no longer. You're not just Hitler. You're worse than Hitler now. How do you are we talking about Pol Pot? Are we talking about Che Guevara? Are we talking about, like, who are we talking about here on the scale of, like, worse than Hitler here? You know, what do you think about PC culture? Is it going too far? How long can it go on?
I have very little patience for that. To me, we need, as a culture and certainly as political parties, to understand that we can have disagreements without automatically making assumptions about the other person, about the reasoning for why they disagree, without the name-calling. It's amazing how many times I've had a conversation, casual conversations, not interviews or anything like that, with a friend or family member, and one person, either participating in the conversation or an observer, will kind of jump in, but you can't say that. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you mean you can't say that? Mm-hmm. And we find ourselves kind of sanitizing our comments. You know, it's one thing when you're running for office, obviously you have to be very careful that what you say is what you mean, because people will quote it, they'll play it back, they'll throw it up on Facebook. You expect that as a candidate running for office. That kind of comes with the territory. You don't expect that as a human being. That's not something that people, you know, talking around the water cooler expect, that, oh, well, this is going to get back to my boss. Yeah. Who's going to get back to corporate, and I'm going to lose my job because somebody's going to, you know, put something up on Twitter that you know, I said X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, I want to throw out a mic and say, you know, Ben Carson once said that the politically correct police are out in full force at all times.
Yeah. I think that part of it really exists to shut down any kind of opposition speech. Yeah. In general, like, if they say that, oh, well, you can't say thing or another because, oh, we're going to just make a huge leap
of logic.
Yeah,
right?
Logic to say that, because you said this, that really means this, that, and the other thing, and then they just run with it.
Well, and like Ann Coulter throws bombs, right?
Yeah,
but she said,
want you to just not say anything, right. So that way they are the only voice out there.
And if they can't shut you down, they turn into a riotous, violent mob.
Yeah.
But Ann Coulter once said, I think it's absolutely true, she said, our blacks are better than their blacks. And on its surface, you're like, what? And then she's talking about conservative blacks.
Let's say that first.
Well,
then it doesn't get the hype.
It doesn't. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She knows exactly what she's doing. In some ways, you know, she knows exactly what she's doing. But what she was saying there is that blacks who are conservatives are actually more hardened, because when they have to go home for Thanksgiving and they have to have dinners on the table, mm-hmm. they better have their research done. They better have thought about what they've said, because they're in a hostile community, right? Sometimes as libertarians, and
you could say that about not just like our blacks are better than their blacks, but our, dare I say, like our people are better than their people, depending on where you are.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're in, like, I lived in Seattle for a number of years, and I really just come out full force as a liberty loving, I wouldn't quite consider myself like a social conservative in quotes, mm-hmm. but more socially conservative than most people up there. Oh yeah, they'd be at my door and all the rest of it. I mean, I'd really have to have it together.
Mm-hmm. All right, Austin Peterson here, speaking with Connor Martin. Connor, thanks for coming and talking to me today.
Well, yes, sir.
So after my U.S. Senate campaign ended, you became kind of a hot commodity. Everybody wanted to get a piece of Connor, right? Everybody wanted you working for them. And so what did you find yourself hopping into after the campaign?
Yeah, so I went a little bit of a while over a month, just a little bored, just kind of sitting around, and around September-ish, YAL, or Young Americans for Liberty, reached out to me saying, we're endorsing Tony Lovasco, we'd really need some help. And I said, well, I can't do it full time, but on the weekends I'd love to. Tony's a good friend of mine, and I'm a member of YAL, so why the hell not?
Yeah, nice. So you're a member of YAL. What is YAL, and what are they doing to help Tony?
Yeah, so Young Americans for Liberty was an organization started from Ron Paul. Originally, they were students for Ron Paul. A few years back, they became Young Americans for Liberty, and originally it was just a campus group. They basically riled up the Ron Paul base. They found all these libertarians out there like, well, I didn't know I was a libertarian. I thought I was a Democrat, or I thought I was a Republican. People that are kind of blinded by the two-party system, and we got them to realize, no, man, you're liberty, or no, girl, you're liberty, you know? come join us.
Yeah.
And so that's really what they are. And now, just this past year, they started Operation Win at the Door, which is basically they deploy student activists all throughout the country to state representative race, to go and door knock for these candidates. Their slogan is, we only endorse Ron Paul or better, so we always know they're good candidates. And basically they pay a decent amount of money. You get free gas stipends, a place to live, some food every now and again. It's a really good opportunity. I enjoy it. I haven't met anyone that genuinely didn't enjoy it. So, yeah.
So are there any other candidates here in Missouri that you're particularly interested in? You got Tony Lovasco. Anybody else you're watching?
Tony Lovasco's race, obviously, is the one I'm watching. Dirk Deaton was a candidate we endorsed in the primary, and he won, so we're pretty interested in that general. He lives in a pretty red area, so we're confident he's going to pull across that finish line. Robert Stokes, who sadly lost only by 65 votes, though. It was really, really close.
Well, that shows how important the door knocking is then, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just a few more doors, a few more households, and we could have won that race.
it can make the difference.
Exactly, exactly.
Connor, you're a pretty young guy. I mean, you know, most kids don't join the Libertarian Club on campus or the Liberty Club on campus. Why were you so interested? I mean, other than just Ron Paul in terms of your ideas, like, why were you drawn to libertarianism as a philosophy, mm-hmm. maybe not a party?
You know, I don't really know when my libertarian ideas started. I was always like pro weed. That makes me libertarian leaning, and
damn right it does.
Yeah, exactly. And it wasn't till 2016 election, during the primaries. I'm not gonna lie, I was a huge Trump guy. Just supported him through and through. You know, Trump's our man, anti-establishment, get him. Just a good guy. And then a little after 2016 election, I started noticing, man, he's not really sticking true to what he said he was going to. And then I started watching this one guy I found on YouTube, what's his name? Oh, Ron Paul. Mm-hmm. I fell down this rabbit hole of 2012 debates, 2008 debates, and then Ron Paul conspiracy theories and all this stuff. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, it's insane. And
yeah, there is a lot, especially in Missouri where we had a pretty wild caucus. Yeah, you missed those, but they were pretty wild, I heard, yeah.
Yeah, and then I watched up in Maine and generally how the Republicans kind of screwed over Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked at this and I was like, man, I'm not pro-war. I thought it was okay to be doing things like bombing Syria because they're killing kids. But in all reality, the Spanish-American War, that was kind of based off of propaganda. That looks like what we're doing in Syria now. We need to stop this. You know, that's what kicked off my stint in the libertarianism. I became massively anti-war all of a sudden, and yeah,
Connor, you're a really young guy.
Yeah,
a lot of young people contact me and send me messages, and they want to get involved politically.
Mm-hmm.
What would you tell young people who want to get involved?
If you're on a college campus, I highly suggest visiting YAL's website. It's yaliberty.org. If you'd like to join, it's yaliberty.org/join. If you'd like to join one of our Win at the Door campaigns, where you will be paid a decent chunk of money to go out and door knock for good Liberty candidates, it's yal.liberty/knock or yal.liberty/hireme. Or we're also doing a Warrior Weekend where we're having people come out and volunteer, but your gas and your housing and all that, that's still 100% paid for, and that's yaliberty.org/weekend. They are all massive opportunities. You'll come out and you will door knock for candidates that are Ron Paul or better, people. I'm telling you, it's a hell of an opportunity. I highly suggest you take it.
Yeah, Connor, we've been doing something a little fun in our weeknights and in the evenings and stuff. We've been playing video games on streaming live on Twitch. Have you been enjoying the Liberty streams, the dank memes and streams on Twitch?
Oh, I really do. I've always been a fan of video games.
Yeah.
And then I found out AP's on Twitch. What the hell? And I started watching these Twitch streams. I'm like, man, I can interact with Austin while I watch video games. This is like the best thing ever.
We've been having a lot of fun, and like we'll have like 10 to 15 people in there, but then we've kind of become a tight-knit little group, right?
Yeah, exactly.
We all kind of help each other out and do research together. It's kind of an interesting new way to talk about our ideas.
Yeah, and that whole market, it's untapped.
Yeah.
That's a massive market that if someone such as Austin Peterson were to get into, I mean, he's young, he's
NYC producer, 1776 on Twitch.
Yes.
Sub me, baby.
Yes, yes, very good. I highly suggest paying on his Patreon, too.
AP for Liberty on Patreon. We really appreciate that. Yep. Connor, thanks so much for all your support and your activism, and we look forward to seeing you, perhaps, on the ballot one day. Thanks, Connor. Have a good one.
Thank you, Austin.
Yep.
Hey, Mark, thanks for coming out today to talk to all the group here at the Republican Liberty Caucus. Appreciate
Always
you.
Always a pleasure being here.
Great. Mark, you were one of the few state representatives who really stuck their neck out for me and endorsed me for my U.S. Senate run. I appreciate that. Sorry I couldn't pull out a victory for us. You've got some experience now in the state legislature. Are you optimistic about the short-term prospects for limited government here in Missouri?
I am very, very confident that we're going to get some good progress towards limiting the state government.
Okay.
We're already trying to keep our budget as small as possible so we can take as little money from our citizens as possible. We're working on business licenses so people quit having to pay so much money just for the right to perform the services that they're looking at performing so they can keep earning money for themselves and their employees. And we try to cut our taxes down on our businesses to help them with cash flow and to keep the businesses we have in Missouri, and try to bring some more in just to create a free market environment that's going to help our state grow.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Austin Peterson here with my buddy, Dual Lauderdale. Dual, thanks for coming and talking to me today at the Republican Liberty Caucus meeting here.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
We've got a really good story. I remember, I'll never forget, we were at a dinner out here in St. Louis, this fancy dinner, and there was this really like loud drunk guy who was, he was having an argument. He's a big Trumper, right? And he was talking about all these issues, and you kind of saw me kind of slap him around a little bit, like metaphorically speaking. You know, we were talking about maybe trade and things like that. But I'll never forget, you were sitting there, you're in your bow tie, and we're talking about trade, and it's very unpopular to be for free trade in the Republican Party right now, especially then, because we're like really intense, the Trumpist movement, we're pushing for tariffs and things like that. But I'll never forget, I'm sitting at that table, and we didn't know each other that well, and you're listening to every word I'm saying. You were hanging on every word, but you weren't saying anything. I was just talking to this guy about trade and free trade and capitalism and, you know, marginal utility and all this stuff. And then you turn and you look at me like, you're my candidate, and you shook my hand. What do you think is going on with the Republican Party that we've had this sort of sea change away from free trade and towards protectionism? Why do you think that is? Is it just like, is this kind of like the PC movement of the right? Like it makes you feel good, do it kind of a policy? What's this all about?
I mean, I actually kind of think you hit the nail on the head with that. I mean, you know, it feels good to buy American. I mean, even a lot of people that support free trade will sometimes buy American. You know, I guess we've kind of grown in this society where we feel like this kind of weird unspoken obligation almost. And then, I mean, combined with just the populism movement right now, of course, and, you know, the nationalist movement, they've kind of come together in this unholy way in which we've, you know, come to focus so much on our nation. You know, like in this kind of like general sense and doing what's quote unquote right and, you know, just loving America, blah, blah, blah. We've forgotten actually the principles of America. You know, they're important in the first place. And one of those is capitalism, and free trade is kind of an essential part of that, of course. And so, I mean, I think it's like you said, there's really actually multiple factors. I mean, the nationalism, populism.
We had the Tea Party, and people said that the Tea Party was populist, and I think there were aspects of the Tea Party that were populist, but it was much more policy-focused. It was much more about tax enough already, you know?
Yeah.
Being opposed to Obamacare. It was about being opposed to raising taxes and against stimulus. Mm. But the populist movement behind Trump is not quite as policy-focused unless you count the wall, which, you know, I guess you should, perhaps.
Yeah.
But what do you think it's going to take to get the movement that? Because I mean, populism is anti-elitism, right? But the elites aren't always wrong about some things, are they? Right?
Like, correct.
Like I hear people talking smack about globalism and all these kinds of things, globalization, right? And I feel like the definition of that has changed a bit. Where it used to be globalization was about international free trade, and now people are saying globalism is about they're saying it's about global government, which I definitely don't support. So what do you think it's going to take to get us back on track in order for us to sort of capture the heart and soul of the American people so that they'll support free trade and these sort of amorphous concepts that help us out, but they can't see how directly? It's a big question.
Well, I have an optimistic answer and a pessimistic answer.
Here, yeah.
You know, the optimistic answer is that, you know, we keep chugging along with, I guess, the facts, you know, the facts of liberty. I mean, the history, economics are completely on our side. I mean, you know, like I made a comment recently, it seemed like almost every popular conservative book before 2016 was just absolutely pro-free trade. I mean, it was just, you know, and so... you know, this populism thing has really just kind of come over like a wave, which I have not even been able to understand. And, you know, I guess we have a chance with that, but there's a part of me that thinks that what's really going to happen is we're gonna get hit with some really negative effects from the current trade policy. And there's going to come a point where the numbers are there and the facts are there, and it's just undeniable that we've, you know, with good or bad intentions, instituted a policy which is destroying growth, destroying choice, destroying... you know, basic economic freedom, really, at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So.
All right. Well, Dual, thank you so much for your input today. Really appreciate you coming on the podcast, and keep fighting for freedom.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this special episode of the Freedom Report podcast, recorded at the inauguration meeting for the Republican Liberty Caucus of Missouri. If you enjoy this podcast and you'd like to get more content like this, you can do me a favor and subscribe to us on SoundCloud, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or many other podcasting services. Also, if you'd like to support this channel and more live streams and dank memes, you can, of course, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/APforLiberty. Follow me on Facebook, Twitter, or on Instagram at AP4Liberty. Thanks so much. Keep fighting for economic freedom and personal liberty.